Okay, Parshas Ha'azinu.
A beautiful song, poetry, literally a poem composed by Moshe on his final day at the end of Devarim. This is really the it. After Ha'azinu, it's just one more parsha. We'll finish up, of course, Simchas Torah with that. But this Shabbos will be Ha'azinu. So what I wanted to do is I chose a couple of different psukim, a couple of different phrases that are within here that I think relates to the theme of what we're about to enter into, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So we'll learn through a little bit of this beautiful song as to those things which do relate. And we'll put us in a mind frame for Rosh Hashanah. Just to begin from the beginning to get a sense of what it is that Moshe is doing, so the Torah begins on 1100. Ha'azinu ha-shamayim va'adabera. Listen up, give ear, says Moshe, O heavens, and I will speak. This is Shema Ha'aretz Imrefi, and let the earth hear the words of my mouth. So when you cut out the poetic phraseology, what you basically have is Moshe saying to the heavens and to the earth, listen up to what I'm about to say. I'm about to speak to the Jewish people. And what he's about to say, he's going to give a brief description of some of the natural qualities of Hashem, so to speak. Kaviyachol is going to take us through a brief history and then describe what will take place if the Jews do not listen. So he's opening up that description with a call to the heavens and to the earth to take heed and pay attention. Rashi quotes, why does he speak to the heavens and the earth? Why is it necessary before he begins speak to the Jewish people? Why? He gathers all the people, he's about to launch into this beautiful poetry, and instead of speaking to the people, he introduces that with a call to the heavens and a call to the earth. Why is he talking to them, telling them to listen up before addressing the Jewish people? So Rashi says, he's calling them to testify. I want two witnesses to be here for my speech, says Rashi. And what better two witnesses than the heavens and the earth, who will be forever? They're not going anywhere. The rest of us, anyone else who I call to testify to the fact that I have given the Jewish people this final speech, says Moshe, they might not be around to remind you of it. But the heavens and the earth, they will serve as valid witnesses because they will always be here. Rashi then adds, and I believe that these two go hand in hand, because obviously we all know that the heavens and the earth can't really testify. So Rashi adds, She'im yizku yavou ha'edim v'yitnu scharam. If the Jewish people merit, and if you want to follow inside him, the first word, five lines down in Rashi, in the first column, She'im yizku, that if the Jewish people will merit, yavou ha'edim v'yitnu scharam. The witnesses will come forth and give their reward. Ha'gefen titein piryah. The vine will put forth its fruits. V'ha'aretz titein es yivlah. The land will be bountiful. V'hashamayim yitnu tzlam. And the heavens will give its dew and its rain. So that by calling the heavens and the earth to testify, Moshe is saying, not just that they'll be eternal witnesses that they're not going anywhere, but that they will then actually be able to carry forth either the punishment or the reward if you heed the words of this song, fulfill your obligations to Hashem. Well, then the heavens will put forth its due, the earth will give forth its produce. The im yischayevu, but if the Jewish people do not merit and in fact are found guilty, so then the edim, again the witnesses, will be the first ones to testify against you. How will they testify against you? Vo'atzaras hashamayim v'lo yiyematar. The heavens will hold back, and there will be no rain. And the land will not put forth its produce. And so really what we have here as an introductory passage to this song, this poetry that Moshe says, is a constant way of assessing how are you doing. By calling the heavens and earth into play and saying, you guys are my edim, you are my witnesses, so if the Jewish people ever want to know how are we standing with Hashem, so as long as we're in the land of Israel, at least, where we have that direct form of communication, that's how you tell. How did your crops do this year? How was the rainfall? That's always a direct link as to how you're doing. And it's interesting, I've always found in the Jewish writings, in the Chumash and in Pirkei Avos, that there are these methods of communication that the sages saw in which Hashem communicates to us where our standing is. And this is one of them, in which by calling the heavens and the earth into play, there's a litmus test almost for the Jewish people, similar to the way that the man fell when we were in the deserts. The man, the sages said, it didn't fall exactly in the same place every day for every person. Depending on where you were and your spiritual standing, it either fell directly on your doorsteps when you opened up the door, there it was, or it fell a little bit farther out, or a little bit farther out, or a little bit farther out. And it was a constant assessment as to how were you, Mr. Jew, relating to Hashem and his Torah and the travels in the desert. And that was a capsule, a 40-year capsule of such communication, such closeness, where you were constantly feeling that assessment. That's a lot of pressure to be under. You can imagine that every day when you'd wake up, you would get a scorecard. This is how you're doing. It's a tremendous amount of pressure, and none of us would like that in our relationships. None of us would like that at our jobs. None of us would like it. It's unpleasant that every day you're given, you're doing all right. But that's how it was. It was stressful, but that's what it's like to have a relationship with our Creator. It was a constant assessment and evaluation. And you find that in other places. I want to share one other. So here's the second one, in which you find Moshe calling the heavens and the earth to say, you're my witnesses, and you'll either put forth or hold back on your bounty, dependent on how the Jews are doing. In Pirkei Avos, there's another fascinating one. I'll just read you the language, just because it's a very beautiful phrase. What about the general perspective that Hashem has on us, whether that He's pleased or displeased with us? So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that as follows. Let me see if I can just find it quickly now. Read it, otherwise I will just tell it to you outside. Mishnah is in the third parak, the 13th Mishnah of the third parak. Kol sheruach habrios noicha heimenu. I pulled out a Russian sitter and I cannot read the other side. So I'm giving you an accurate translation. That one is not going to do it for me. In the Hebrew English version, it's still the third parak and still the 13th Mishnah. If the spirit of one's fellow is pleased with him, if your friends are happy with you, are pleased, you have a pleasant relationship with the people around you, ruach hamakom noicha heimenu, then the spirit of Hashem is also pleased with you. V'kol she'ein ruach habrios noicha heimenu, and if the spirit of one's fellows is not pleased with him, well then, the spirit of Hashem is not pleased with him also. And there's, again, a link that if you're acting in a way that the people around you find you pleasant and are pleased with you, well then, that's the mission is linking it, then you can be rest assured that up in heaven, in Shemayim, Hashem's spirit is also pleased with you. And if it's not down here, then it's also not there. And there's a way that we can sort of sense how we're doing by the reactions we get from people in this world, just like we had in the Mun, just like we had with our produce in the land of Israel, whether or not the rains are coming and the crops are being produced well. You also have it just in our relationships with others, that it's exactly the same, the sages say. If you can't get along with your friends down here, well then you should just know they're not happy with you up there either. And if things are pleasant and pleasing to your friends down here, then they are pleasant and pleasing to Hashem above as well. Anyway, that's the introduction to Ha'azinu. That's the introduction to this phrase, and then poetry continues. Moshe's song continues. I don't want to read through at the beginning, but just to get a sense, I'll just read one or two verses until we get to the psukim that I wanted to focus on this morning. So he says, "May my teaching drop like the rain, may my utterance flow like the dew. Storm winds upon vegetation and raindrops upon blades of grass. When I call out the name of Hashem, ascribe greatness to our God." Which, by the way, that verse, Kishem Hashem Ekra, when I call out the name of Hashem, verse 3, Havugod Lelokeinu, you should describe greatness. The Gemara learns out from here that this is the source for saying a bracha before we learn Torah in the morning. That before you call out the name of Hashem, you have to ascribe greatness by blessing Him. So that the sages derive from this verse, this is how we know that one must make a blessing on the Torah before learning when one wakes up in the morning. And there are many commentators who believe that it is actually a biblical commandment to make this blessing based on this verse. that we ascribe greatness to Hashem before when we call out in His name, and therefore we give a blessing before studying His Torah. Okay, the verse that I'd like to first focus on is verse 11, on page 1103. So just to move back one or two psukim to understand the context of where we are up to, starting with verse 8, when the Supreme One, when Hashem gave the nations their inheritance, so Moshe says, when Hashem was divvying up the land of the earth, entire land, when He separated the children of man, He set the borders of the peoples according to the number of the children of Israel. So that after the flood, everybody was divided, everybody got their portion of land, and established Israel as his people, as his lot, as the next verse says, for Hashem's portion is His people. He chose the Jewish people, gave them the land of Israel, which at this point in history hadn't been done yet, but established that for them, made them into His people. Jacob is a measure of His inheritance. And then it gets into, He discovered Him, says Moshe, in a desert land, in desolation, a howling wilderness, a reference to initially back in Mitzrayim, without any mitzvot, totally desolate, encircled Him, granted Him discernment, preserved Him like the pupil of His eye. Each one of these phrases requires, you'll see, if you look on the right-hand side of the page, the amount of Rashi for the few amounts of psukim. Each one of these phrases requires explanation, not for today. Pasuk Yudal, verse 11 is what I want to focus on today. Kinesher Ya'ir Kino. There are three phrases here. Kinesher Ya'ir Kino. He was like an eagle arousing its nest. So we have the imagery of Hashem as an eagle above its nest. Al Gozalov Yirachef. Hovering over its young. Yifros Knafav Yikachehu. Spreading its wings and taking them. Yisaehu Al Evraso. Carrying them on its pinions. As the art scroll translates that. So the imagery that we have here is that of an eagle. And there are a couple of different ways that Moshe describes how Hashem functioned as an eagle with the Jewish people in our infancy stages. First he says, he was like an eagle arousing its nest. How an eagle arouses its nest is different than the other birds. Somehow there's something unique about an eagle arousing its nest. And Hashem is described like that eagle arousing its nest. Then we have it, Hashem hovering over its young. Moshe describes the eagle in that sense. And then he says a third thing, that the eagle, or in this case Hashem, spread its wings and took them, carrying them on its back on its wings. So you have waking its nest, hovering over its nest, and then carrying them on his back. What's the reference? What is the imagery that we're supposed to take? That Moshe describes Hashem's relationship to the Jewish people as an eagle in these three ways. So Rashi here says as follows. I'll read a little bit inside. We'll translate it. Rashi, again, in Pasuk Yudal, is on the bottom of the first column. Starts the first, right, the Yud Aleph is right, the last word on the line, about, I don't know, 8 lines up. Says Rashi, what does it mean, Kinesher Ya'ir Kino, that like an eagle arousing its nest? What's the reference of Hashem awaking us like an eagle? Rashi says, Nohagon b'rachamim uvechemla, kinesher hazeh. Dealing with us with rachamim, with mercy, with chemla, having not just kindness, but compassion, thank you, on us. How is so, in the way that He wakes us in the morning, is that a measure of rachamim, the compassion and mercy? He doesn't quickly enter into the nest. He doesn't scare them by suddenly bursting into the nest. He makes noises with his wings as he approaches from tree to tree as he comes closer, landing from one tree to the next tree, going from one branch to the next branch, slowly as he approaches, making more and more noise as he gets closer, so that he doesn't suddenly appear and poof, There's the mother bird standing on top of you. But like an eagle who approaches its nest slowly, so too did Hashem do that. That they should be aroused and have the strength to receive him. What's the meaning of that? It's the meaning of that. So I believe the understanding of that is, we are not ready for a revelation of God's presence. We are so far right now that if we would have the fulfillment of our Rosh Hashanah prayers, as we will start tomorrow night for the next 2 days, of Meloi Chal Kol Ha'olam Kulo Bechvodecha, reign over the entire world, reveal yourself over the entire world, it would be a sort of shock factor, the reality of what the world really should be like, and what God's presence really is like from what we're living right now, would be a lot. So you have an idea. Moshe says to the Jewish people, I want you to know the traits of Hashem. He's like an eagle arousing its nest. It doesn't just suddenly explode onto the scene, but begins rustling and rattling the leaves beforehand, in the previous trees, and the branches leading up to it, letting him know that he's coming. And I think what this would mean to us today is as we come closer and closer to the time of revelation, as we come closer and closer to the ultimate redemption, the coming of Mashiach, there are going to be rustlings in the works. There will be these leaves rustling, there will be these incidents and events that are taking place which will slowly let us know that it's coming. It's coming a little bit more. It's coming a little more. Now, we might not even be aware of them, and I would not be surprised that in hindsight we'll look back and say, well, sure, the founding of the State of Israel and the Jews' return, just saw last night, that the new census was out in Eretz Yisrael, and they have, was it 5.47 million Jews now living in the land of Israel. I think that was the number that they had. Baruch Hashem. What was it? Maybe 100 years ago, in the turn of the century, I do not believe there were more than 100,000 Jews living in Israel. I think that would be a large number if there were 100,000 Jews living in 1907 in Eretz Yisrael. So in 100 years, to take home 5 million Jews. There are 5.4 million Jews living in the land of Israel right now. I think there are only 13 or 14 worldwide. So we are slowly inching our way towards the halfway point. We're half a world Jewry. I would certainly say, in hindsight, we will look back and say, this was the beginning of the rustlings. But there are events which took place. There are events which are... the trees are shaking as God is coming close and the revelation comes closer. That's the trait of Hashem, as Moshe describes it, Kinesher Ya'ir Kino, as an eagle arouses its young, not exploding upon them too quickly, but slowly letting them know that it's coming. So too does Hashem let us know that He's coming by doing the same thing. And it's a matter to be on the lookout for those things as we prepare ourselves for the day of revelation. That's point one, which I find to be just a beautiful idea. Then the second phrase that Moshe said was, Al goizalov yirachef. He hovers over its young. What's the meaning that Hashem is like an eagle hovering over its young? Says Rashi, I'm at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines from the bottom of the first column. Al goizalov yirachef. Eino machvid atzmo aleihem. He doesn't literally burden himself on top of them. Ela mechufaf. He hovers above, meaning not putting his entire pressure or weight on top of them, but is a little bit removed from them. Nogeya ve'ena nogeya, like there, but not really there. Touching them, but not really touching them, to give them a little bit of space. That's what the eagle does. What's the relevance, what's the parable, the storyline that we take out of that, how Hashem relates to us, similar to an eagle that hovers over its young? Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so too does Hashem, Shakai lomitz anua shigia koyach, shogi koyach, that it would be too much strength for us to see Hashem directly. Kishibo litein Torah, when Hashem gave us the Torah, revealed nigla leam eruach achas. He did not lo nigla aleam eruach achas. He didn't reveal himself from one direction, elame arba ruchos, but from four directions. Now, the way that we would really understand what Rashi is explaining would be in a more modern parable of the classic example, which is always used about electricity. If you were to take your little radio and try to plug it into a generator that supplies the power for an entire city, so your little radio would explode. Try to plug a little light bulb into that. There's just way too much power from the source to get from the source directly into where you want it.
So in order to allow for that, so what we do in our modern age is, well, it goes on from that generator down to another, down to another, down to another, so that by the time you flick on a light in your house, the source of power that's doing that is very far removed from the ultimate source that's providing the city with all of its power, and you're clearly able to then handle that in the levels that we needed for our household appliances. So Rashi explains, not using that example obviously, but instead of revealing himself from one direction, from one ruach, which would have been a blast of extreme power, so to speak, which would be incapable, which would have rendered the Jewish people incapable of accepting that and being able to deal with that. So he revealed himself from four directions, meaning broken down and spread out over a couple of different pressure points, which then allows for the Jewish people to handle that. And the example that that Moshe chose to express that was the eagle hovering over its young, not resting literally on top of them, which would have caused too much pressure for them to be able to tolerate. So instead of that, what you have is Hashem on top. And the meaning of that is that he's never revealing himself in a way that's beyond our ability to handle. It's always tempered in a way that we're able to handle. So the two ideas that we have so far that Moshe wants to describe to the Jewish people about our relationship with Hashem is, number one, he's going to let you know when he's coming. He's not going to suddenly appear without any warning. There are going to be rustlings in the wind. You've got to be listening for them because you might not notice them. Don't let them get lost, but they'll be there, the rustlings. You'll know he's coming. And when he comes, he will come in a way that you are able to accept and will not be in a manner that is beyond your capability to handle and integrate. And then Moshe said a third element of the eagle. This is probably the most famous of these three. Yifros knafav yikachehu, spreading its wings and taking them, carrying them on its back. So too, says Moshe, Hashem spreads its wings and carries us on the back of his wings. What is the meaning of this? Says Rashi in the last two lines of the first column. Yifros knafav yikachehu kishibo litlon mimakom lemakom. When the eagle wants to take its young from one place to another place, einan loitlon viraglov kisharofos. The eagle does not carry its young with its feet like all the other birds. Lefi sheshar ofos yureyim min hanesher. All the other birds are fearful of the eagle. Shehu magbia loofu poreach aleihem. The other birds are fearful of the eagle which flies above them. So the other birds don't want to carry its young on its back because they want to protect their young from the eagle which flies above it. So the other birds always carry their young in their feet, with their feet, to protect them from the eagle. Aval hanesher, but the eagle doesn't fear any of the other birds because it's soaring high above the other birds. It only fears, says Rashi, eina yorei ela min hachetz. It only fears the arrow, the human shot arrow from below. So the eagle doesn't want to carry its young with its feet, exposing it to the humans and its arrows. The eagle therefore carries its young on its back. Lefikach noison al knafav. In order, says Rashi, Omer mutov sheichnos hachetz bi, would be better that the arrow should pierce me rather than my children. That's what the eagle does in carrying its young. Says Rashi, so how does this relate us to our relationship with Hashem? Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to Hashem, bo eseh etchem al kanfei nisharim. Moshe, the Hashem himself describes in the story of the Exodus in Shmos, that I will carry you on the wings of eagles. And Rashi quotes that when the Jewish people were traveling in the desert, so Hashem had his clouds spread out, that any of the arrows shot by the Egyptians were caught by the clouds of glory and protected the Jewish people in their travels. So just like the eagle protected its young by placing them on its back, protecting it from the arrows of the humans, so too Hashem protected his young, us, the Jewish people, in our travels through the desert by putting a cloud of glory up to catch all the arrows from the Egyptians. A beautiful insight. I'd like to add a thought. I wish I could quote this in the name of the person whom I heard this from, but I do not remember. But the thought has always stuck with me. Most of the young, Rashi describes the difference between the way that birds carry their young and the way that the eagle carries its young. The birds carry their young by clutching them in their feet because they fear the eagle above, so they protect them by having them underneath them, and they grab them by their feet and they fly off with them. But the eagle carries them on its back.
there is the science for the difference between whom they're protecting, or from whom they're protecting, why they're not, you'd want to carry below or carry above. There's another extremely fundamental difference in these two processes. For when a bird takes its young and clutches them in its feet, who is the active participant in that process of protecting the young? It's only the mother bird who reaches down and clutches the young in its grasp and flies away with it. For an eagle to carry its young on her back, the eagle does not have the capacity to pick up its young with its wing and place it on its back. How do the young ones get on the eagle's back?
They're required to make effort.
They have to hop on. The eagle has to lower itself down, and the young ones have to climb aboard. And there's no capacity. They don't have workable thumbs like we do, or even their feet aren't. They just can't do it otherwise. So in choosing the parable that Moshe says, Hashem carries us on its back like an eagle, protecting us from the arrows below by carrying us on its back, there's a catch to that. And that is, you gotta hop on. You gotta jump on, because the eagle isn't going to grab you by the throat and take you onto its back like the other birds. It will make it possible by crouching down and moving you over, but you gotta take that last step and hop onto the eagle's back in order to be afforded that protection. And I wish I remember who made that comment, but I think it's a beautiful, beautiful comment describing the nature of, I'll be there for you, but you gotta jump on board. You gotta be there, and once you do that, I'll carry you on my back and I'll take you. But you gotta be willing to take that step and be on top. But that is all encompassed in this one little pasuk here, which Moshe describes in three different ways how Hashem functions as an eagle in his relationship with the Jewish people, arousing its nest, as Rashi describes, slowly and with warning, letting us know that he's coming, hovering on top of its young, not ever revealing himself with too much force at one time, but spreading that out and allowing us to be able to integrate and internalize the revelation that we're receiving, and then carrying us on its wings like an eagle carries its young on its back, protecting it from the arrows below, so too Hashem carries us on its back. As long as we're willing to hop on and go along for the ride, we'll be protected from the eagles below, from the arrows below, on the back of Hashem. And that is the verse, beautiful, beautiful description that Moshe gives of the parable of the eagle. Okay. That's one idea. I want to share with you another. As the song continues, this is one of those parshas. You just want to really just have the time to go through each phrase. Each phrase is so rich. I just want to point out, before I get to the other prasuk that I want to really focus on the bottom of that page of 1103, so you see just the end of verse 13, he would suckle him with honey from a stone and oil from a flinty rock, describing how Hashem had provided everything from us, even from that which would seem to be a place which could not provide for us. Honey came from a stone, oil from a rock, butter, cattle, milk of sheep, fat of lambs, rams, wheat as fat as kidneys. He would drink blood of grapes like delicious wine. The imagery of a land of plenty, and I'm stressing the language of fat as kidneys, fat of the lambs, like a real luscious and rich land. And then you have the contrast in verse 15, Yeshurun became fat and kicked, and the Jewish people became complacent. We became our own, like as if we were able to do it on ourselves. And the juxtaposition of the words, the idea of I provided all this bounty, the fat of the land, and then you became fat and kicked. And again, you became fat, you became thick, you became corpulent, you deserted your maker, you were contemptuous of the rock of its salvation, you provoked his jealousy with strangers. The song then continues of, be very careful. This is what took place once already, where Hashem provides so much for us, and then we become so... I did this myself, and I'm responsible for this. You became fat and kicked and rejected and just ignored the source from where it came, and then you have the anger. The song continues with the anger that arouses from Hashem and the wrath that brought forth all the evils and the famine and the wars and all of those things. And what I want to then continue, as Moshe describes the calamities that will befall the Jewish people,
The very bottom of this 1105, verse 26, I had said, referring to Hashem, Hashem says about us, when we had become fat and complacent and corpulent from all the good that Hashem had blessed us with, Hashem says, I will scatter them. I will cause their memory to cease from man. So much so, Hashem had said to himself, I would just like to disperse them from everywhere. Just get rid of them, so much so that their memory should be gone. That nobody would even know that there was ever such a thing as the Jewish people. That's how angry, and that's what I would have done, if not for one thing, says Moshe, in the name of what Hashem was saying. And that's verse 27. Were it not that the anger of the enemy was pent up, lest his tormentors misinterpret, lest they say our hand was raised in triumph. We once touched on this verse from another week. I want to get into it again. This is just the magnitude of this verse is so powerful that Hashem says, I had become so disgusted with you that I'm ready to destroy you. And I would have done it were it not for the fact that the enemies, the nations of the world, would have looked on and they would have misinterpreted what took place. And they would have said, our hand was raised in triumph. And it was not Hashem who accomplished all of this. Were it not for that, you wouldn't be here today. That is a powerful statement. It's a frightening statement. And it's one which forces the question of, really? You're telling me that the only reason why we're here is because the nations of the world would have said, huh, we did it, and that's upon what we stand? Our existence is based on the fact that they're going to say that? So the Ramban is bothered by that. The Ramban is bothered that it should be that Hashem would have liked to have destroyed us. And the only reason why he's not is because of what the nations of the world are going to say. Who cares what they're going to say? So I want to just share with you part of this Ramban, which I think really leads us into Rosh Hashanah. And yes.
Isn't that kind of in line with what we say in a certain way? We say that we're the representatives of Torah, of Hashem.
Right.
We're representing. So, in a way, the opposite of that would be, if we weren't here espousing the one God and the way that Hashem wants it to be, then that would be, that's been a very common theme in Drushas, to talk about that. So this is kind of, that's the...
100%. So the Ramban writes, and he points out that there are numerous times, and this is where we touched on it before, there are numerous times where Moshe makes this argument, in which he sort of says, what's everyone going to say? What's going to be? So the Ramban says, Einenu kirotze laharos koicho bein son. This is not because Hashem wants to show his strength amongst his enemies and amongst the nations of the world. Kikol hagoyim ka'ayin negdo, ve'efes v'tohon, they're nothing to him. Could care less about them. Matters not what the nations of the world think, or say, or believe. Even though the verses would imply that it's only because that the nations will misinterpret and say, we did it! It's not because of Hashem. Says the Ramban, impossible. It can't be that Hashem is directing his behaviors because of what they would say. They mean nothing to him. Well then, what does it mean? Aval Hashem boro es ha'odom shiyakir es boro v'yoyde lishmo. This is where this is all about Rosh Hashanah. Hashem created man down here in our world to recognize his creator and acknowledge his great name. That's what Ramban says this over and over and over again, and because he says it over and over and over again, I'll say it over and over and over again, because it is the fundamental point, says Ramban, as to what we're doing here, to recognize and acknowledge our creator. And he gave us the ability, permission to choose between good and bad. And when we choose bad, and we reject Hashem, deny His presence, well then all that we have, when the nations of the world, Kasher Chotu Birt Sonom, when the nations of the world said, we don't want to buy into this, but you created man, not the Jewish people, we created man with the purpose of recognizing you as the creator. When mankind rejected that and rejected God, Lo Nisha Rakam Hazel Lishmo, the only nation left was the Jewish people. And therefore Hashem chose us, Upir Sebohemi, through us, spread with osos umosum, with great works and miracles, that He is the God, the creator of everything, and it is through us, says the Ramban, that we are that last hope to then bring His name to the nations of the world. And if our name would then be lost, if our nation would then be destroyed, Yishkechu ha'amim es ososov v'es ma'asov, and all of the works and miracles that God has done for the last thousands of years would all be lost, because we are the ones holding on to them. We are the ones who celebrate Pesach every year and say, remember to the world all that God created. Remember what took place. And if it wouldn't be for us celebrating it and reliving it, nobody would talk about that anymore. And it would be gone, and it would be left. V'lo yisupar od b'hem. No discussion about the miraculous or presence of Hashem. Then Adar Yaskir Kain, person would then simply put it into the hands of the stars or a natural event. Even today you still have these works coming out, these publications all every once in a while that explain how it was natural events which caused the splitting of the sea or caused this or caused that. You'll always still have that. And therefore, Tiyak Havanos Habriya Ba'adam Batla Lagami. This is such a powerful phrase. The Kavana of the Bria, the intention of the creation of the world, would be entirely nullified if the Jewish people ever disappeared and there was nobody left to bring into the nations of the world the presence of the Creator. Kavanos Habriya, the entire purpose of creation, would be totally null and void. Shelo Yishoyer Bahem Yodeyes Ba, there'd be nobody left who knows his Creator. Only those who continuously anger God. And therefore, since Hashem wanted it to be a world, there has to be a nation around who will tell those other nations about their Creator. So says the Ramban, it's not the understanding in the verse, I'm going to leave you because they would think that they did it. That doesn't matter to me. I'm going to leave you because I need you to teach them that I exist, because they've already given up, they've rejected me, and therefore you're the only nation that can still do that. And I cannot therefore afford to get rid of you, because you are my people who are going to bring me and fulfill the purpose of creation to everybody else.
I'm extremely sorry. Is anyone driving a Bob Bays Maxima?
Yeah.
Oh, yes,
you're
in
the front? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, they're putting the lights and it's in the way.
Can I move it in 2 minutes?
Yeah, he said just as long as it's moved before they get through.
I'll move it in 2 minutes.
Okay.
So says the Ramban, the Kavonis Habriya, that's the entire purpose of creation. And therefore, no matter what we do, no matter how angering we are to God, no matter how much we might reject His teachings, He can't part with us, because we are He and He is us. In terms of the purpose of the whole thing, what are we doing here? The purpose here is to bring about God's name into the world. And I leave you with this thought, because as we move into Rosh Hashanah, this is what Rosh Hashanah is all about. This is it. This is about man, on the day that we were created, celebrating our birthday literally, and our ability to recognize Hashem, acknowledge Him as our King and Creator, fulfilling the entire purpose of creation, as a Jewish people calling out and saying, we are here, and we recognize you, because we are the only ones left to do it, and that's why you made us. Why you want that is a whole different story. But that was the Ratzon Hashem, that's what you want to have. You want to have a world of human beings with free choice, and with the physical and the spiritual put together, and that too, being able to say, we recognize you as a God, and we can say, Kadosh, 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 you are a holy, in the same way that the angels in heaven say that, we can do that here with our finite physical beings. We recognize you and acknowledge that. And this is the day, the 2 days designated for that. One day really in the Torah we celebrated, of course, as two designated for that purpose, which is the entire Kavanas Habri, the entire purpose of the creation. And in this song of Ha'azinu, in which Moshe says that idea, when you angered God and you became fat in the land, and you thought that it was all you and you forgot about your God, He would have destroyed you, but you're His last hope. And He's going to keep you around because we have a job to do. And we need to do that job. And we should be zeicher, we should merit to be able to fulfill that. We should have a good Rosh Hashanah in which we declare Hashem to be the King truly inside of us and acknowledge that, spreading that to the world around us one at a time. You should have a good Kabbalah Shnayor, a good healthy new year, health, prosperity, happiness, and continued growth in all areas of your life. Good Yom Tov.
You too.
Thank you.